You documented the killing of journalists in active war zones like Sudan, Ukraine, and Gaza. But you just mentioned Mexico. But in addition to Mexico, Saudi Arabia, Colombia, Bangladesh, Pakistan, can you tell us, are these killings that are mostly carried out by the state or by...
Mostly by the state, some of them by organized crime groups, but mostly by the states. In Saudi Arabia, since you mentioned Saudi Arabia, the journalist who was killed is Turkil Jaser. He is a prominent journalist who was imprisoned 4 years before he was charged with the death sentence, and then he was hanged and killed last year, unfortunately, by the Saudi Arabia government. In Yemen, the journalist who was killed by the Houthi army, which is a terrorist group, a terrorist designed group.
Sara Kudal, we want to thank you very much for being with us, Middle East and North Africa Regional Director at the Committee to Protect Journalists. We'll link to both of CPJ's reports, record 129 press members killed in 2025, Israel responsible for two-thirds of deaths, and we'll link to your report, We Returned from Hell, Palestinian Journalists Recount Torture in Israeli Prisons. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Nicole Salazar, Sarah Nasser, Trina Nadura, Tamer Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Massoud, Safwat Nizal, Sam Alkoff, our Executive Director, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, Hugh Grant, Karl Marxer, Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh for another edition of Democracy Now!
You are tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Saddle up and ride with country music in your head from 6 till 9 every Saturday morning on KBOO's Swingin' Country. You can count on Swingin' Country's stable of rotating hosts to fill your early morning with country, alternative country, western, western swing, and even some rockabilly, bluegrass, and Americana tunes. Swingin' Country on KBOO is mighty fine, Saturday morning, 6 to 9.
Good morning. This is Jacqueline Keeler, and I am today's another episode of E Pluribus Unum, your weekly Thursday call-in show. And basically, today we are going to discuss the state of the union versus the state of the people. Right. Once again, the call-in number here in the studio is 503-231-8187. And yesterday I did host the Wednesday Talk Radio show, and you did call in, and it was good to hear your voices again. And it was a very long State of the Union that Trump put together or delivered over an hour and 40 minutes, the longest State of the Union ever. I think the second longest was his previous State of the Union, from previous administration. So I did play some of his words. I think I will play some more again today just to reconnect you if you didn't hear it before. Remind you of what he said and some of the more ridiculous elements of it. We're going to play a sort of very short 2-minute cut put together by Mehdi Hassan. Basically, he's like, I watched this and put this together in 2 minutes, so you don't have to watch it. And so let's play that really quick 2-minute take on the State of the Union.
A short time ago, we were a dead country. Now we are the hottest country anywhere in the world, the hottest. Our country is winning again. In fact, we're winning so much that we really don't know what to do about it. People are asking me, please, 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 Mr. President, we're winning too much. We can't take it anymore. We're not used to winning in our country. Until you came along, we're just always losing, but now we're winning too much. And I say, no, 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 you're going to win again. You're going to win big. You're going to win bigger than ever. And to prove that point, here with us tonight is a group of winners who just made the entire nation proud. The men's gold medal Olympic hockey team. Come on in. And in 1 year, we have lifted 2.4 million Americans, a record, off of food stamps. So in my first year of the second term, should be my third term, but strange things happen. Let's also ensure that members of Congress cannot corruptly profit from using insider information. Look, nobody stands up. These people are crazy, I'm telling you. They're crazy. That is why I'm also asking you to end deadly sanctuary cities that protect the criminals and enact serious penalties for public officials. The Somali pirates who ransacked Minnesota remind us that there are large parts of the world where bribery, corruption, and lawlessness are the norm, not the exception. I've always wanted the Congressional Medal of Honor, but I was informed I'm not allowed to give it to myself, and I wouldn't know why I'd be taking it, but if they ever open up that law, I will be there with you someday.
That was very interesting. I think that every one of those statements is he's almost telling on himself. Is that the way to put it? Where he's sort of, you know, talking about corruption, of course, the most corrupt presidency in modern history. And I think that was probably pretty corrupt in the past as well, but this is overtly and horrifically corrupt. And so, once again, this is Eplur Basudam, and I'm Jacqueline Keeler. And 2 nights ago, we watched a spectacle in D.C., which we just heard a very short 2-minute take on. It was over an hour and 40 minutes, quite long, and he did get pretty crazy there, as you heard, and maybe more entertaining in 2 minutes than it was to have to listen to the whole thing. So if you did watch it, let me know, call in, and the number here is 503-231-8187. And do you think that this is a golden age, as Trump was saying? Is this reaching you in your home? Today we're going to actually break down the data, the rebuttals, and the resistance. So this is something that's going on all over the country. There were a number of responses to and even alternative State of the Union addresses given. And I did discuss a bit more of those yesterday. But I'm going to pull up some more kind of quotes from this. I also want to discuss something I discussed yesterday as well, which is what happened on the at the State of the Union between Representative Ilhan Omar from Minnesota, whose state, as you know, has faced an incredible levels of violence from the Trump administration. And I would say I don't know if there's ever been a period where it's ever been quite like this before, for a whole city to be under siege this way. Of course, we experienced that here in Portland, but that was and we are still experiencing it in Oregon, but this was at a level that I don't think any other city has seen. So let's play that interaction between Representative Ilhan Omar and Trump with his anti-immigrant lies.
So tonight I'm inviting every legislator to join with my administration in reaffirming a fundamental principle. If you agree with this statement, then stand up and show your support. The first duty of the American government is to protect American citizens, not illegal aliens.
Isn't that a shame? You should be ashamed of yourself not standing up. You should be ashamed of yourself. That is why I'm also asking you to end deadly sanctuary cities that protect the criminals and enact serious penalties for public officials who block the removal of criminal aliens, in many cases drug lords, murderers all over our country. They're blocking the removal of these people out of our country, and you should be ashamed of yourself.
Okay, so yeah, sorry about there's some. I did try to cut down on the cheering. It actually went on for 2 minutes in the house, and so it was it was kind of pretty barbaric times. But yeah, I mean, you heard the really nationalistic type chanting going on afterwards. USA, USA, if not the lamest chant that any country has. That's what you heard there. And so, so that was, as the president was declaring that Somalia, you know, pushing really racist tropes about an ethnic group here in this country, about them being Somali American pirates in Minnesota, and, lying about, alleged fraud just to justify a war on fraud led by J.D. Vance. Ellen Omar just didn't sit there. She stood up and told the truth, and she did shout, "You've killed Americans." And he's telling her and all of us that we should be ashamed for standing up to the horrific abuse, that violence that he has spent our tax dollars on, attacking Americans and residents of our country who also provide a lot to our country. And of course, he doesn't provide a lot. I think we went through the numbers a couple of episodes ago about how much immigrants bring to this country, trillions of dollars. And of course, Trump has always bragged about not paying taxes and being too smart to pay taxes and stuff, and then also stiffing his own contractors as well. What does he provide, really? And of course, when she talked about killing Americans, she was talking about Renee Good. She was talking about Alex Pretty. And American citizens, not quote-unquote criminal aliens, as Trump likes to say. And they were Americans killed by masked federal agents on their own streets, in their own neighborhoods. And then I think there's something I didn't bring up last time, which is the story of Balia Rahman, Omar's guest. And so she was the one who already survived a physical altercation with federal agents. She stood up silently in the gallery and was still forcibly removed, injured, and arrested just for standing. Of course, many of our local Oregon delegation did not attend, and they actually gave up their seats for Epstein survivors to be present and witnessing Trump. Once again, I ask, if we are in this golden age, why is a citizen arrested for standing silently? And why is the congresswoman called deranged for naming the dead? And so please do call us. Our number here is 503-231-8187. And we're talking about human cost of these anti-immigrant lies. And we know that he's still going after sanctuary cities, and that means Portland as well. His idiotic ideas and lies are backed by the full power of the most powerful country on earth, which our tax dollars fund. So please do call us, 503-231-8187. So I have this little short video. It's from CNN, and it is pretty aggravating to listen to in a certain sense. But these are on-the-street responses from New Yorkers to Trump's State of the Union address. So can we play that?
Did you watch the State of the Union address?
Parts of it, yes.
What was your reaction?
It was a very strong performance. I thought it was very polarizing. between the Democrats and Republicans.
What really upset me the most was the way Congress and especially Mike Johnson stood up and clapped behind him when he knew that he was blatantly lying.
What's something that you were hoping President Trump would address that he didn't?
Epstein files, obviously.
Screaming at a president? I mean, that's ridiculous. That is so... That they should have removed them, but you know, in a way, I'm glad that they left them sitting there screaming like lunatics.
The things I heard were not truthful about the economy and all the great things that are supposedly happening, and I think the opposite is more the case.
I did not watch a State of the Union address. Usually every year I do. I wasn't looking forward to hearing, unfortunately, what President Trump had to say.
I didn't really have too much of a reaction because my expectations were already that it's so low. That it would all just be a bunch of repeated falsehoods.
There you heard some on the street reaction from CNN about the reaction to the State of the Union address. And I think the one thing that made me the most angry was the first guy who I think in the comments is described as sort of a Wall Street bro type guy. And of course, calling the president's speech a strong performance and just attributing very polarizing because of the Republican and Democrats and stuff. And then, of course, others were saying things that we'd expect, disappointments with Speaker Mike Johnson for applauding while the president was blatantly lying. And, of course, the issue of the Epstein files not being addressed. And as we noted, there were Epstein victims in the audience that night. This lady, she's kind of described as a rich lady in a crazy hat, crazy fur hat, saying it's critical of behavior of some members of Congress during the speech, and basically saying, oh, I'm glad they left in, Representative Omar responding, she calls it screaming ridiculous, like lunatics, and they should have been removed, and it was just, she seems to forget that this has happened before. I mean, Republicans have shouted out and said things during Obama's speeches. That's happened before. It's never not happened before. And they have very selective memory. And so, what are some of your responses? I'd be interested in hearing that. Please do call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. And I wanted to look a bit at some of the other, CNN's Harry Enten did some reporting before the State of the Union and reported that Trump's approval rating had plummeted 36%, the lowest of any president this century at this stage. And among independents, his approval rating is negative 47%. 47 points, which is kind of staggering. And of course, they're always, the mainstream Democrats and the Republicans, they're always looking at that unicorn voter, that independent who could swing anyway from election to election. And it looks like they're swinging very strongly away from Trump. And then, of course, here in Oregon, Senator Jeff Merkley was called out the great betrayal. I played some highlights of things that he and Senator Wyden said before the State of the Union, but he was very critical of the billionaire's win law, and which is triggering automatic $45 billion cuts to Medicare this year alone. And Merkley says this agenda is gutting parts of the government that help working families thrive to fund tax breaks for the ultra rich. He's sounding the alarm on Trumpflation, the $1,700 tariff tax hitting every Oregon household. And that's the average that I think that every household is paying is $1,700. And sadly, a lot of Americans, particularly Trump and MAGA supporters, do not understand that tariffs are actually a tax on them. The only country in the world paying this tax is the United States of America. No one else is paying it. And yet they think that Trump is, he claims that he's pushing back and, because we're all being, the most powerful country was being taken advantage of by all these countries. So we're going to tax them. But no, he's taxing us. He's taxing the American people. And as I mentioned in a previous episode, there's some estimates that with the recent striking down by the Supreme Court of Trump's rights to use the tariffs in the way he was, this could result in $170 billion having to pay back that amount of money. And, of course, it's completely takes out any of the financial gains that Trump claimed was going on. And it's questionable whether that money will go to the taxpayers who paid the tax in the store where they're purchasing things, or whether it would just go to the companies, the corporations, and whether or not they would actually reduce the cost of things again once it's lifted. So that's something to keep a pin in and to keep an eye on. So another thing is looking more at the numbers, of course, Trump is heading into the midterm this year with a negative 27-point net approval rating. This is the lowest of any president at the stage, as I mentioned before. But also, I mentioned this yesterday, too, that 68% of Americans say this administration is focusing on the wrong things. While, you know, the White House talks about Liberation Day tariffs, they really did call it. We're all paying 17% more for beef, 6% more for electricity. I've gone over how a lot of electricity costs are also tied to data centers and sort of underwriting their costs. And of course his approval among independents has plummeted quite a bit. So if you're an independent voter in Portland and you're listening to this show, or you know, a retiree on a fixed income, do call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. And does a 36% approval rating reflect what you see in your neighborhood? I think that it's insane, actually, that it's even that high. It should be lower. Let's also take a quick look at some of the responses to Trump's State of the Union. I know that many of you may have already heard about Virginia Governor Abigail Spanberger. She actually spoke from Colonial Williamsburg, and she discussed the 250th anniversary of the Constitution. She also focused on the 1,700 tariff-taxing families and noted that, she's a Democrat speaking from Virginia. I think she even spoke from the old House of Burgesses, which was one of the older colonial legislature buildings in the country. And she noted that our broken immigration system is something to be fixed, not an excuse for unaccountable agents to terrorize our communities. Also, another person who responded that night was Representative Summer Lee, who gave the Working Family Party's response. And she called the State of the Union an obituary for the country working people built. So she's arguing we are witnessing authoritarianism marked as populism, masked as populism, I should say. And she noted that while we are told we can't afford child care, we found billions of private prisons and Palantir contracts to warehouse black and brown people, and it's a moral failure of politics. Let's actually play Representative Summer Lee's response to the State of the Union.
As a result of an unprecedented level of kleptocracy, Trump's family is now $4 billion wealthier than before he was elected, not to mention the $400 million plane that he got as a gift from the royal family of Qatar. Further, the billionaire class as a whole is doing unbelievably well under Trump. Since his election, billionaires have seen a $1.5 trillion increase in their wealth. That is rather extraordinary. The result, we now have more income and wealth inequality than at any time in the history of our nation. But while the richest people are doing extraordinarily well, Trump said last night that he wants to, quote, stop illegal aliens and others who are unpermitted persons from voting in our sacred American elections. That cheating is rampant, end of quote, says Donald Trump. For a start, I do find it interesting that Trump talks about our sacred elections. This is the same man who, after the 2020 election, was caught on the phone pressuring Georgia's Secretary of State to, quote, find 11,780 votes, end quote, so he could overturn the result. I guess that election in Georgia was not too sacred. This is the same man who provoked a violent insurrection on January 6th, 2021, in order to overturn an election that he lost and to stay in power. And despite more than 60 court cases to the contrary, he continues to claim that he won the 2020 election and that it was stolen from him. This man who claims that our elections are sacred has still not said that he won't run for a third term, despite the fact that it is blatantly unconstitutional. The Constitution limits individuals to two terms. But here is the truth about our elections. Despite 154 million Americans in 50 states voting in the last election, election fraud in our country is extremely rare. Even the conservative pro-Trump Heritage Foundation's database of election crimes listed only 24 instances of non-citizens voting in U.S. elections from 2003 to 2023. Hundreds of millions of voters in a 21-year period, 24 instances of non-citizens voting. That is not exactly a crisis. But that big lie that millions and zillions of undocumented people are voting, that big lie is the foundation of the SAVE Act, legislation that would effectively require every American to produce a passport or birth certificate to register to vote. The reality is that less than 14% of those arrested by ICE in Trump's first year back in office had violent criminal records. 86% did not. But the truth is, as we have seen on our TV screens, is that ICE is occupying and terrorizing American cities, rounding up American citizens and asylum seekers, kicking down doors without due process, sending five-year-old children to detention centers, and illegally deporting people to countries to which they have never ever been. Horrifically, we also saw the videos of ICE and Border Patrol agents murdering Renee Good and Alexander Preti in cold blood. Last night, President Trump said that he is working to drive health care costs way down. Well, could have fooled me. Trump's so-called big, beautiful bill is throwing 15 million Americans, low-income and working-class people, off the health care they have through a $1 trillion cut to Medicaid and the Affordable Care Act. By the way, the purpose of that cut is to provide $1 trillion in tax breaks to the 1%. This year, as a result of Trump's actions, health insurance premiums have doubled on average for 20 million Americans in the Affordable Care Act.
Okay, so that was Bernie Sanders. Sorry about that. I got that. So we'll save Representative Summers Judy, and so she has some really great points to make that could act as a good closing comment. So, but let's look at Bernie's comments. He's delivering here. He did his own alternative State of the Union on Tuesday night. And, he didn't hold back. I shortened it a bit. It was a bit longer than that, but definitely not an hour and 40 minutes. You can find it online. So he said the president is the masterful at creating a parallel universe for his supporters, a place where millions of dead people are supposedly collecting Social Security checks while the actual billionaire class is looting the treasury. He addressed, accusing the president of pathological lying right, and prioritizing the billionaire class over working families. And you know that while Trump claims the nation is richer than ever, this wealth is concentrated solely among the billionaire class, which has seen a $1.5 trillion increase in wealth since his election. And of course, Trump's own family, I think, has gained, what did you say, $4 billion? His family is $4 billion wealthier. And this is that unprecedented kleptocracy. And it's going on. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, that, you know, Trump's allegations in his speech really were telling on himself, because this is exactly what he's doing. He's turned our country into a kleptocracy. And of course, he mentioned the Qatar gift, the $400 million plane that was given to Trump as a gift from the royal family of Qatar. And the contrast to how what the economic reality for working families is, which is 60% of Americans living paycheck to paycheck. That sounds a little low to me, honestly. And housing crisis, over 20 million Americans spend more than half their income on housing, while nearly 800,000 Americans are homeless. So he goes into that. And of course, his hypocrisy about Trump talking about elections being sacred, yet he in 2020 he attempted to order the Georgia elections representative to basically find 11,780 votes in Georgia, and of course his participation and his voting on of the January 6th insurrection as well. And then the non-citizen voting myth, even the Heritage Foundation, which of course wrote Project 2025, found that between 2003 and 2023, there were only 24 instances of non-citizens voting. This is not a crisis. We're talking hundreds of millions of votes and only 24 instances over 20 years. And of course, the disenfranchisement with the SAVE Act, which could require passports or birth certificates for many Americans to vote. And of course, you may have heard of the impact this could have on married women who had changed their names and their names no longer match their birth certificates. And so, so what he went through, and of course, the doubling of health insurance premiums for 20 million people under the Affordable Care Act. And of course, the $1 trillion cut to Medicaid and the ACA, which was used to fund tax breaks for the 1%, and that prescription drugs have not gone down. The pharma companies increased prices on over 850 drugs this year alone. So that's just a really brief oversight of that. I wanted to go, this is another long piece I admit, but of course, historian Heather Cox Richardson, I really wanted to feature her take a bit. She actually did her own State of the Union address on her channel and she on YouTube, and you can also find her on Substack as well, Heather Cox Richardson. And she publishes Letters from an American, and she's been tracking the shift from democracy to what she calls a white Christian nationalist regime. So let's play the clip from Heather Cox Richardson.
July 2025, the Republicans passed a measure called the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which extended tax cuts for the wealthy and for corporations, while not extending them for lower and middle income people. Those tax cuts are adding dramatically to our deficit and to our debt. But at the time, the President of the United States, Donald Trump, said that the monies that were being used for these tax cuts would be made up by tariffs and by extraordinary economic growth. Last Friday, the U.S. Supreme Court declared the tariffs that Trump had enacted primarily on April 2nd, 2025, the ones he called the Liberation Day tariffs, were unconstitutional. The reason the Supreme Court said they were unconstitutional was because Trump had imposed them under a law called AIPA, which is an emergency law that enables the president to take some control of the U.S. finances in times of an honest emergency. And Trump had declared an emergency, two emergencies actually, to put his tariffs in place. One of the emergencies he declared was drugs coming over the border from Canada and from Mexico. Another emergency that he declared was the longstanding trade imbalance between the U.S. and a number of its trading partners. He declared those two emergencies in order to use, or that enabled him to use, IEEPA to put massive tariffs on whole ranges of other countries. The Supreme Court said that he could not do that, that the Congress controls taxes and that taxes are tariffs. And that's in our Constitution, that it's Congress that can levy revenue measures and tariffs are part of those revenue measures. What the people in Minneapolis did is they gave a lesson for the rest of the country of how you break authoritarianism. And it has been a really, really effective lesson. Because so many people kept thinking it didn't matter if you stood on the streets, it didn't matter if you went to the rallies. And what the people in Minneapolis have done by withstanding ICE and by driving the popularity of those federal agents through the floor, what they have done is they have given the world a model for resisting authoritarianism. So the American people have stood back on that, even when it cost the lives of Renee Good and Alex Preddy, two heartbreaking deaths along with so many others, but ones that illustrated to the administration that they had lost the support of white suburbanites. And that was a huge moment for the administration and has led the plummeting of Trump's popularity. The other thing that the American people pushing back has shown to the world and to American democracy is that democracy begins at home. It begins in your towns. It begins in your neighborhood. It even begins in your house. And it grows from there to your state, and it grows from there to the national level. So Americans are starting to find their agency, and they, as they do so, the American electeds are listening. So where does that leave us for this year's State of the Union? Our democracy is absolutely in peril, but the American people have rediscovered their agency. They have rediscovered what the Constitution means. They have rediscovered what it means to live in a democracy, and they are insisting on having their voices heard. This seems to me, on February 24th, 2026, the night of the alternative State of the Union, the official State of the Union, not at all a bad place to be, because the American people are rediscovering the true meaning of what it means to live in a democracy, the responsibility of living in a democracy, and what American democracy really stands for. With that, on the eve of the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, it strikes me that the state of the American Union is improving.
That was a very long pause there. I actually cut down that pause. It was quite long. And so she has a very sort of a, I think it's in the end, obviously a very hopeful outlook, I would say, that we are improving. And that's what I think we always have to take assess what we have gained through this. Of course, you know, terrible crisis of interior people's lives, of, you know, very small children being tortured and separated from their families, and all these horrific things that have happened under Trump, which, of course, were in no way addressed adequately in the State of the Union, or honestly addressed, which we did not expect, of course. But you know, it's, you know, even as Heather describes the president and his State of the Union as unprecedented madness, you know, she really points to the way in which this is a rediscovery of our agency as Americans. And and she terms, what she terms the Minneapolis model, right? Neighbors fighting together against, you know, masked federal agents, and also this happening in the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, and so she's very hopeful that we are, or she sees that we are returning to the true meaning of democracy, because Americans are finally forced to defend it here in a meaningful way. Let me know what you think about. Do you feel that this is a, do you see this historical crossroads that Heather Cox Richardson is describing, or do you view more as Bernie's oligarchy, where the billionaire class is doing so well? What is your main focus on this, and how do you feel about these two points of view, Bernie and Heather Cox Richardson? You can call us here in the station at 503-231-8187. I have a bit of a head cold today, so that's why I'm struggling a bit with talking. She also did bring up the Epstein Files longer version. Hers, of course, was not an hour and 40 minutes, but it was much longer than the clip we just played. And the DOJ, illegally withholding 52 pages of FBI interviews that implicate Trump. So how do you feel about the Minneapolis model? What did you feel watching it, and how do you feel it's also playing out here in Portland? Your neighbors standing together across racial and class lines to physically stop federal agents from ripping families apart and harming and hurting their neighbors in democracy. Do you feel like we are actually at the point of a shift in momentum and a tipping point, how do you feel the Supreme Court ruling against those Liberation Day tariffs? How do you feel finding them unconstitutional? How do you feel that's going to play out in the long run? Oh, we have a call in Santiago. Good morning, Santiago.
Good morning. Yeah, I think the overturning of the tariffs is unconstitutional is actually a pretty good move. It at least shows that there's some kind of backbone in, one of the supposed like governing bodies. But at the same time, like the fact that the Supreme Court has as much unchecked power as it does, even if it's doing things that are in the favor of the people, is actually pretty it's still pretty terrifying. I think it's a lot of people coming around to seeing exactly how powerful they are and how unchecked they've gone. So obviously the movement within the people is stirring power up enough to where they have to start making moves against the president. But I think the biggest thing, talking about that last person who was speaking about rediscovering democracy, I don't know, because what I always tell people is that, like, when you read history, the only way that the concessions of the New Deal were given, and it was because there was enough groundswell of grassroots movements and not from people who were particularly interested in preserving democracy, talking about communists, talking about syndicalists, socialists, labor unions, people who are interested in actual democracy, not like the preservation of institutions necessarily. And it was enough push from them that forced the hand of FDR. And he understood that they were threatening revolution. He said it in his memoirs. He said, if we don't give them something, they're going to take everything. And I think that, like, and because both Democrats and Republicans have been so good at destroying the movement, at destroying leftist movements to the point where, like, Bernie Sanders is considered far left is considered far left in today's standards, is actually pretty wild. That's where we need to head in that direction. I mean, the No Kings protests, they're bringing out a lot of people, but they don't have a real organizing ethos other than just like F Trump, and the fact that, like, I guess you know, AOC and Bernie Sanders are kind of left to clean up the mess that the mainstream Democrat leadership has made, and where, you know, they're going to put like leadership pundits in places where they get to speak more prominently and speak for the entirety of the party, rather than having Bernie Sanders or AOC, you know, who are problematic in their own ways, still reflect a larger part of the voter base, where they'll put Hakeem Jeffries rather than Bernie Sanders. And we've seen that the mainstream leadership of the party is fighting against the leftist movement of the people. So, I mean, we just I guess the whole point is just to say that, like, if we're going to solve the problem, then we need to push even further left than what the mainstream is considering allowing, if that makes sense. And I keep telling everybody, like, get involved with parties that have absolutely nothing to do with electoralism, but have more to do with education and direct democracy. And I'm talking La Raza Unida, you know, African People's Socialist Party, All African People's Revolutionary Party, you know, Party for Socialism and Liberation, Revolutionary Workers. I mean, there's so many organizations out here. I mean, because Shama Sawant has a Revolutionary Workers Party that's actually gained a lot of steam by actually calling out the power, by actually calling out power structures and actually saying, like, no, not no kings, no capitalists, because we're not dealing with kings, we're dealing with capitalists. I think that's kind of the silent part that's left out. So I don't know. It's good to hear that they're somewhat acknowledging, but if we really want to get the changes we need, then we need to be more direct in what we're trying to say, and not allow people who are connected to the Democratic Party, you know, be able to shape the talking points for the people.
Yeah, at some point, yeah. Or else we're dealing with a capitalism that may not even need us anymore with AI. You know, of course, is that capitalism?
Yeah.
Thank you. That was really well. Could you name those parties again really quickly?
There's La Raza Unida Party, which focuses mainly on Chicanos, Latinos, stuff like that. There's the African People's Socialist Party, the All African People's Revolutionary Party. There's a Party for Socialism and Liberation. There is the Revolutionary Workers Party, which is a Shama Sawant. She's based out of Seattle. She's running for Congress right now, so you can check her out. There's a revolutionary Freedom Road Socialist Party, I think is what it's called. Freedom Road Socialist Organization. That's another one. No organization is perfect, and there's going to be disagreements. But the fact of the matter is that we need political parties that aren't just interested in getting people out to vote. We need people to be educated. We need to get people angry. And the Democratic Party is trying to reroute that anger back into electoralism. And, like, you know, electoralism is important, but it's not the only thing. But in kind of a silent way, they try to tell us that it is the only thing. And we need people who are, people talk about, well, why aren't people more angry? It's because we have a party in power that dilutes that anger. So we need so being involved with these parties, they'll get you more in touch with like the reality of what's happening in our communities, and that will stoke that anger and push it. And that's what we need. We need people angrier than what they are now.
Great. Thank you, Santiago. That's a really good point. We have another caller, Bradley.
Oh, hello. How are you this morning?
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. The only three things that I saw in the State of the Union that had a modicum of truth were the black man on the floor of the House of Representatives holding a sign that said black people aren't apes. That was very true.
Representative Alfred.
Yeah. Yes, Congressman Green. And he, but that's just sad. I mean, you know, here we are, and that. The other thing that I saw was the look on the face or the facial expressions of the Chief Justice of the United States, and it just it said a lot to me, and I was just very loud and clear and very true. And then Ilhan Omar reminding the President of the United States that he had killed people too. That was true. So those are the three pieces of truth that I saw. And then again, I was listening to the last caller about all the different parties that people can join to do things. But I take issue with him mentioning no kings and indivisible. In fact, indivisible, if you go to a meeting, even over here in Southwest Washington, you'll see a lot of people that are actually civically engaged and they're being directed to things that they can do in their own communities, like collecting food for food banks and make sure that they participate in local government. And what's amazing about these organizations when you go to them is that people are united and actually trying to do things to help people and to try to do things that we can actually do to save democracy. And I'm engaged in one of those organizations, and I'm very happy that I get to be engaged. And it helps you channel your rage. I mean, it was interesting. The other caller says we got to stoke the rage. Well, there's a lot of angry people out there, and Indivisible in particular. They are putting people together and channeling it in very positive ways. Another one is League of Women Voters. I know that it's a very good organization about monitoring and being nonpartisan. And they just kind of shy away from all the political rhetoric and the political theory. It's more about just doing actual action to help your people that are around you in your community. And that's all I got to say. I'm a big fan of yours, as you probably know, but thank you, and you have a good day. Bye.
Yeah, those are good points. You know, my mom was involved with the League of Women Voters for a long time, when I was growing up. So, I agree. And so, as a Native woman, my mom always had a point of view that's sort of different about things, of course, because she was raised traditional Navajo. My grandparents, as I mentioned many times, didn't speak English. They traditional Navajo. All they knew was traditional Navajo culture and religion. And we strange to call traditional Navajo because our religion is really part of our whole life. You know, it's about our whole relationship to the world. And so, but my mom always, you know, emphasized that that's what she led with was a Navajo, a Diné perspective of the world, which was actually matrilineal, right, based in a completely different social structure. And so whenever she was in these organizations, she was trying to push it, you know, to shape it, to include that perspective in those organizations. So, which was, you know, she came of age during the women's, during the ERA, during the women's rights movement, and her introduction to America, coming off the reservation, and so, you know, she was very involved with that, and it influenced me growing up, because she would talk about a lot of her political theories and ideas a lot to me, and how, you know, how Navajo culture. But basically she felt like if Americans became more like Navajos in their outlook and social and sociopolitical construction, that the world would be a better place because of the equality between men and women and the way that's built into the whole worldview and stuff. So and the care for our mother and father, Mother Earth and Father Sky. So that's a little bit of a detail there. But I thought we'd come back to you actually when we have a few minutes left. I don't know if we have time. We have 8 minutes left. How long was this Summer Lee thing? It is 3 minutes. Maybe we'll go into, I'll quickly give a, if we end before before her piece is done, I'll just say that Congressman Summer Lee, Democrat of Pennsylvania, she delivered the official Working Families Party response to Donald Trump's 2026 State of the Union address. And you know, she frames the administration, of course, as authoritarianism, and presents a progressive vision on the needs of the working class. And also, she notes some of the wins that they've had recently. So why don't we play Congresswoman Summer Lee's clip.
This is not a normal time, and our response to it can't be politics as usual. Trump's speech wasn't a list of accomplishments. It was more like an obituary for the country working people built and a celebration for the billionaires who want to strip it for parts. An obituary for our right to vote, for the ability to make rent or the chance to own a home, for good jobs. Don't let anybody tell you we can't afford it. We somehow find endless money for ICE, for private prisons to warehouse black and brown people, and for bombs to be sent abroad. But we're told healthcare and childcare are too expensive. And when we begin questioning those priorities, the powerful try to divide us once more. But that old playbook is losing its grip. When Trump returned to the White House for a second time, too many institutions surrendered. But ordinary people stood up. When federal immigration agents invaded Los Angeles and Minneapolis, when they killed Keith Porter and Renee Good and Alex Preeti, people didn't stand by. They stood together, protesting, documenting abuses, building mutual aid networks, demanding that ICE gets out of their communities and that Congress not give them another penny. I believe the American people deserve leaders who are as brave as they are. Look at New York City Mayor Zohra Mamdani, who took on Andrew Cuomo and his corporate backers and won. He led a movement of renters, young people, and working families who had been told their voices did not matter. He proved that when you show up, when you speak clearly about how to meet people's basic needs, the people respond. And now look at New Jersey's newest Democratic nominee, Anna Lilia Mejia. She started her race at 5%. She was outspent 10-1, and she still won because she outworked party bosses and billionaires. And as a former director of the New Jersey Working Families Party, she had a record of delivering, raising the minimum wage, guaranteeing paid sick days, and defending voting rights. And there is more of this to come. That's also why I moved to subpoena the DOJ to release the full, unredacted Epstein files back in July. I know what it feels like to be targeted by billionaires, to face attack ads and smear campaigns meant to silence you. It was demoralizing and exhausting. It was also a waste of their money because our movement won and we have to keep winning. Because when we have progressives in Congress, we get legislation that meets the moment. We get people who fight for accountability and justice. We get opportunities to do the right thing. So if you're sick of the corruption and the cruelty in this administration, if you're frustrated by Democrats who speak boldly but deliver cautiously or sometimes even vote with MAGA, then believe that change can and will happen if we build political power together. That's what we're doing at the Working Families Party. Join us. Let me end with this. Trump is trying to steal everything that isn't nailed down for himself and his obscenely wealthy friends. But this level of thievery requires consent. It requires silence, exhaustion, resignation, but we do not have to consent.
That was Congresswoman Summerlee, Democrat from Pennsylvania, delivering the official Working Family Party's response to Donald Trump's State of the Union address. And one quote that really stood out for me was, Trump's speech wasn't a list of accomplishments. It was more like an obituary for the country working people built and a celebration of for the billionaires who want to strip it for parts and the way in which they can find endless money for ICE and for bombs and yet none for health care and child care. And so I found all of these voices very enlightening and maybe giving me some more hope, I guess. Is that too strong of a word? I think Heather Cox Richardson, saying that the State of the Union is improving, and that we are basically with the Minneapolis model, we're learning how to fight for our democracy, and maybe I'll do an episode on the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence because I have a lot of thoughts about it, and of course, as you know, members of my husband's ancestor fought against the American Revolution, the Mohawk leader, and sided with the British against it. So maybe that we need to do a deep dive into that and see what it really meant and why it's producing the, in some ways it produces the sort of our rights to have rights. And in other ways, it really was was part of a system to deprive Native people of our rights to our land, a whole while claiming to be inspired by the Iroquois Confederacy and democracy in Native communities. It sought to, the whole goal was to take our land from us. That's what the Revolutionary War was about to me. And I wrote about that in my book, Standoff, as well, in greater depth. And so, but anyway, thank you so much for calling in, for our callers. And this is the second episode done this week on the State of the Union, but I think there was more to say, particularly with perspectives like Representative Summer Lee and Heather Cox Richardson and Bernie Sanders. But thank you so much. I think the biggest takeaway I take is that the State of the Union isn't found in a teleprompter in D.C. with the orange guy delivering the notes, but it's also found in our neighborhoods, in our own solidarity with each other and our refusal to be silenced. So that's what I have to say. And so this has been, I'm Jacqueline Heeler. This is E Pluribus Unum. I will probably post more about this on my Substack and include a link to the show. So I did get a chance, which I really wanted at some point, is to go through the polling data in depth. So thank you so much.
KBOO Portland.
Cable Community Radio holds